So when we talk about new simulations that we've put together, these simulations are used by the ACT team to test the rate analysis pipeline. But I hope that they're general enough that they can be used by other CNDA experiments underway or upcoming. And I need to point out, really this talk is a collection of work done by all of these people. Paul, who's talked to you heard earlier, Sadiq, who's the lensing expert, Carlos, who did the infrared source model, and Yin Ting, who will talk after my talk on the radio source model. So a lot of the details can be deferred to that. And Heatrack and Jerry worked with Paul on the SC and Kevin on the dust maps. So the reason why we put together these simulations, obviously, seeing the experiments are coming, and the signs that you can get from that are from the power spectrum, also from the SC clusters, and also from cross correlations of the various microwave components. And what you want to do before you start claiming signs from your data is to run simulations through the same data analysis pipeline and verify accurate recovery of known input. And because you can get science from many different techniques, you really want simulations that can also verify the science from these different techniques. So this required high resolution, by which I mean half arc minute at least, and also cosmological scale microwave simulations that also include the most accurate astrophysical components that you put in based on observations that we currently have. So the components that are in this simulation, so Monday we heard a lot about SC effect. We tried to put in everything, including that. So we've got the primary microwave background that's lensed by the structure in the simulation. We've got the thermal SC from the galaxy clusters, the kinetic SC from the clusters, as well as the intergalactic medium in between the clusters. Of course, higher order relativistic corrections for all the galaxy clusters. And then we put in infrared sources from dusty forming, star forming galaxies, and radio sources. And then dust, and whether we add synchrotron and free emission is under consideration. But I would like to add it all so that we have a complete set of what we think are all the relevant components in a microwave spectrum. The simulations themselves are full sky in heel picks to make it easy for everyone to use. They're inside of 8192, which gives them a resolution of about 0.4 arc minutes. Their frequencies are 6 frequencies, so we chose 30, 90, and 350. And then the central three are the ACT frequencies, 148, 219, and 277. So we widen the frequency range to make it also applicable for other experiments. We also have catalogs of all the halos in the simulation and their properties, RA, Beck, redshift, mass within 500, 200 RVR, and also the integrated SC signals at all the different frequencies within different radii. And we also have catalogs of all the radio and infrared galaxies in the simulation and their properties, RA, Beck, redshift, and the flux in each bed in Jansky. And the large scale structure itself is made from one octant of the sky, and then it's mirrored 8 times to make the full sky. We had made a previous set of simulations so a while back, and the improvements to this set of simulations is that this one is based on WMAP 5 as opposed to WMAP 3. Which is good when you're combining your data with WMAP 5 data to constrain your parameters, not introduce any tension from WMAP 3 and 5. The radio and infrared galaxy populations are clustered and correlated with the galaxy cluster populations. The primordial microwave background, as I mentioned, has been lensed by the structure in the in-body simulation with the ray tracing probe. And we also included, as I also mentioned, the kinetic SC from the intergalactic medium, which is actually a significant component of the kinetic SC effect, and it's not just from the cluster. The gas description, as Paul Bodian mentioned on Monday, has been refined, and has been compared to more data also clustered at lower mass, so hopefully it's even more accurate, X-ray clusters at lower mass. We've got an easier to use Helix format because before we had a different projection that made it a little harder to use and more frequencies to widen the applicability. So the large-scale structure simulation based on the cheap particle mix curve, the following references largely done by Paul. The cosmology in that n-body simulation is consistent with WMAP. The volume is 1,000 megaparsec over h on a side particle mass 7 × 10^10. So that's a massive particle. And we, as I said, we save the particles in one octet. So for distances larger than the box size, you do have some duplication of structure. However, every cluster in the octet is unique because when you paint the gas physics in to the dark matter clusters, if there's duplication, it's usually at a different redshift or at a different viewing angle. So the projected gas that you see will be different and every cluster is unique. And we go down to halos with friends of friends mass of 1 × 10^13 solar mass and include all halos below redshift of 3. And so in this slide, I show the comparison with Jenkins for different mass limits of our halos. This is done by heat trap. So for the lensing, first we make an unlensed CMB map with field takes using WMAP 5 cosmology. Now what we do is for all the L's below 20, we use the ALMs exactly from the WMAP 5 ILC map. So they're just those ALMs, not modified. Then for L's smaller scales, we use an input spectrum and generate Gaussian random field. And then we lens that with a ray tracing plate. So in this plot, what I'm showing, this is the unlensed theory, and actually the simulation points are on top of it. And then over here is the lens theory, which goes right through the simulation points. And here is a blow up of that. You can just see the perfect agreement. And these figures were done by Steve Dodds. So the motivation of why we wanted to go to the trouble of doing this lensing is one that a measurement of the lensing distortions in the CMB can allow you to reconstruct the projected matter distribution, which is sensitive to dark energy, neutrino mass, etc. And so it's one of the variables that can potentially be measured by acting SPP. The other is that cross-correlating the CMB lensing signal with tracers of the large-scale structures, such as SC clusters or infrared sources, radio sources, can also tell you about structure formation and gravity on large scales. So we wanted an internally consistent simulation with the lensing by the same structure as the SC signals follow and infrared and radio galaxies correlated with those galaxies. So the way the lensing was done was we had our in-body simulation broken up into shells, which are different time slices, and surface overdensity was created for each one. Then we used that to create an effective convergence map for the octant. And for the shells that went beyond a redshift of 3, we used a Gaussian randomization based on contribution to the theoretical convergence power spectrum from that redshift. Then we replicated this often to make a full convergence map, and from the convergence map generated the deflection field, use the deflection field for lenses. And so in this plot, I'm showing the power spectrum of the effective convergence map. Those are the red points from the simulation. And the black line is the theory expectation, and the dashed line is the linear theory expectation. So again, very nice agreement. This is a difference map between the unlensed and lensed CMB. And what you can see is that there is a large scale non-Gaussian these introduced by the lensing. Again, this is all considered. Oh, and the color bars, so it goes from minus 80 to 80 microseconds. The SD signals were described in Paul's talk on Monday, and there's two papers that will describe, that are coming out, that will describe how this was done in more detail. So it's Bode at Strachan Clinic, which is in prep, and then also Track It All, which is in prep. So the gas was painted in, and assuming a polytropic equation of state and hydrostatic equilibrium. Also, what Paul mentioned, that also the gas wasn't just painted in a sphere, so you could have interesting shapes. There are four free parameters in the model. So there's the star formation rate, which depends on the halo mass and the redshift. There is the non-thermal pressure from cosmic rays, dynamical energy through the mergers and the transfer of energy from the dark matter to the gas, and also the feedback from AGN, which also depends on the star formation rate, which depends on the halo mass and the redshift. And this model was calibrated with X-ray gas fractions as a function of temperature. So this sample of clusters includes lower mass clusters and groups, which is part of the reason why our SE signal was refined. So now we have some new measurements here with the lower mass clusters and also the Clinton sample. So the power spectra that I show over here, the black is the total SE signal, and the red is the thermal SE. And there's two models here. So the solid lines are the ones that we use, and the dashed lines are the ones, it's a basic model with no feedback. So you can see how adding the feedback is reducing our power. And the blue curves are the kinetic SC, again, with and without the feedback. And there is a green line here. I don't know if you can see the green line, but that's the Kamat-Kinzel-Jack power spectrum from the Lambda website. And it's kind of a coincidence, really, that it fits, because there's no real reason that it needs to.
Stop out.
But it shouldn't change its bulk velocity. Shouldn't change its
momentum. Oh. Right.
It might
go
against you, the gas, though.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, why doesn't she answer this?
Can we get these proportional to the velocity to push out the gas?
Those are basically tuned to fit X-ray data. And Schubert showed us on the first day that his models are also sort of purely living in observation space. His power spectrum was actually above the Komatsu-Celchak lines, whereas yours are actually now consistent with Komatsu-Celchak. So there's something that I don't understand here. So better, yeah. And this model is also sort of fitted the Compton-Y scaling relation. So,
so when you add the peak, okay, I don't know why this power spectrum is larger than Komatsu and Celchak. When you add feedback, then you blow the gas out and you lower the Y parameter. So if you looked at the profile, you would be measuring a lower Y than you would measure with no feedback. And when you do that, then you get a power spectrum that's lower than the model without feedback. He said a correction to his talk that he actually had a profile that was higher than one without feedback. And so that's the part that I don't
understand. No. He was living completely in observational space. He had basically scaling relations that were basically taken from the observations and then putting in some very simple recipes for.
You cannot completely live in observations.
Yes, but
very
apart from assumptions, apart from like, should we?
What signal is this?
This is 4W5, so 0.8. But I think you and Paul just need to compare exactly what you did and sort out the details. Because there's probably some subtle differences.
I mean, it also, that's where there is contribution.
coming from intergalactic space, from the what percentage?
I got a second stat.
My point is settlement and stuff.
Yeah, I'll take care of it.
Go ahead.
I must think you told that it's important to include the not only clusters and rules, but also
the kinetic energy from the RTM. Yes.
What contributions here? What percentage?
Everything. So all the kinetic energy from the clusters and the IGM are here, and the contribution from the IGN is about the same order of magnitude as contribution from the clusters. So it's very important not to neglect that.
So you cannot show them separately from the ready.
One could make a map of just the KC from the clusters with the catalogs that we have, because we give the kinetic SC integrated for clusters. You could do that, but I don't show that here. I show everything.
In the IGM, the electrons and protons could be in non-equilibrium. Could you take into account how big of that? Do you have a sense of how big of that effect that would have on the contribution due to IGM? Because that might significantly suppress the effect of IGM.
Might. But, to my knowledge, there's no simulation that's even included this contribution at all. So this is certainly a first order to do that. Okay, let me explain now, since there's questions about the IGM. By the way, this is just a picture of our SC signal at 148 with the thermal SC and kinetic SC. And so the halos that are above 3 times 10 to the 13 and less than a redshift of 3 were made with the method I described in the previous slide, which Paul discussed. For the smaller halos, down to 1 times 10 to the 13th solar and the IGM, the way that was calculated was we had all the particles in the simulation, and we calculated the velocity dispersion of a particle using its nearest neighbors, and from that, related that to the effective pressure with a constant, proportionality constant, and that constant was matched to hydro simulation. And we also had the line of sight momentum, so we could calculate the KSC and thermal SC. So the thermal SC is proportional to the effective pressure. We use the line of sight to calculate the kinetic energy. And for the contribution between 3 and 10, we also wanted the thermal SC and kinetic SC from that region as well. So we didn't have halos there, and we didn't have all the particles either. So the thermal SC contribution is negligible there, but the kinetic SC contribution is not negligible. For the thermal SC, we assumed just an isothermal temperature of 10 to the 4th Kelvin. And for the kinetic SC, we still had shells of overdensity and line of sight velocity to calculate the kinetic SC. So that's how we included that contribution. And all of this will be described in T-Track's paper that's coming out. For the infrared point sources, we used a model based on Rigby et al. 2008. The details of the model are complicated, but it's a 6-parameter model and basically needs to satisfy the following constraints, which we tried to match. So one is the Kobe-Fires infrared background that's seen in Fixin et al., and that we said had to be an upper limit of the total infrared intensity. Then we wanted to match the effective spectral index, so intensity is proportional to frequency to some index. We said that that should be close to 2.6. That was found by some lower redshift infrared population, and then that was extrapolated to higher redshift. Then we wanted the source counts to be compatible with the SCUBA counts at 353 gigahertz in this flux range. And we wanted the source counts to be compatible with the BLAST high flux population. BLAST results just came out recently. And we also had a constraint on the power from infrared sources from UPFAR. Okay, so this plot is basically a comparison of the data to our model. So let me give it some explanation. The red is our model. In this plot, the black line is the SCUBA, the best fit to the SCUBA data at 353 gigahertz. Now, the points over here, they're actually dominated just by a very few number of points in the blast data. So the SCUBA data was less than a square degree, the blast data was larger, about 10 square degrees, and they found a couple of bright sources, possibly lens and infrared sources. They're in the plot, in the blast plots that we saw internally, there's a little bit of escape here. But we're really talking about three sources or so in their max. But the reason that we wanted to include that was just so that we had a sense that we were adding a contribution of these bright sources because we would need to max them out to make our power spectrum. The reason why the model is not matching the infrared background, the high-res infrared background, is a limitation of our simulation because we only have, so all the infrared sources were put in halos. And our halos only go down to 10 to the 13. So all infrared sources actually live in a halo. The question is just at what mass is the halo? Since we don't have lower mass halos, if we increase the number of low flux sources to match the SCUBA line, those sources would have to be put in halos of higher mass, 10 to the 13, and then they would be more clustered. If we increase the clustering term, we would no longer match the upper constraints, we would exceed the upper constraints. So it was very hard to match both of these data constraints, largely because our simulation and no simulation really goes down to halos of 10 to the 10, these cosmological simulations. So we just decided to try and match this upper constraint. So here the thick line is the contribution from the clustering, the thin line is the Poisson contribution, and the red line is our model. And that's the upper constraint. And these dots are different frequencies. And this was worked on by Carlos.
So what do you do about point sources that, what's the highest redshift in the simulation of the halo?
That's the other thing, the halos only go out to redshift of 3. And since the IR sources are really at a redshift between 2 and 4, what we actually did was we weighted them in a redshift reading between 1 to 2. And that's another limitation of the simulation, but I think the larger limitation is just the lack of the low mass halos. And we didn't really want an inconsistent simulation where we just try to populate, just throw down random halos, random sources correlated with halos for the low flux because, according to Carlos, those low flux sources are known to have quite a lot of clusters. For the radio point sources, and all technical questions should be deferred to the talk after mine, we create a radio source model which reproduces the local radio luminosity function at 151 megahertz at a redshift of about 0.1. So this radio luminosity function is a compilation of the halo mass function, halo occupation number, and a radio luminosity distribution of sources. So for the latter two, the halo occupation number and luminosity distribution, those we have parameterized models, and then we adjust the parameters to match the radio luminosity function. Then when we've matched that at low redshift, what we do is we divide the sources into two populations, so corresponding to FR1, FR2, with differing density evolutions with redshift. We believe that the two populations don't evolve the same, and then we match the source counts at various frequencies. I'll show you the plots in the next slide. And again, see Lin et al. In prep, which should be coming out soon, and in the next talk. So here I show the match to the data. So this plot is at 151 megahertz. It's a radio luminosity function at less than 0.3. And there, I hope you see the green. There's green and blue points, which are the data points of the two different populations. And then the red is our model. So this is the 3CR survey, and there's the reference. And then here, what we've done is we've matched to the source counts at four different frequencies, So at 1.4, there are all the references to describe the data points. And again, the red is our model. And then at 33 gigahertz, I believe that's WMAC reference, the first one. At 95 gigahertz, this is a fit. The solid line is a fit from Zazadi et al. And then at 145, these are Akhtar data points. Again, the insane will explain all about this. These are his figures. The galactic emission from the dust was done pretty much the same way as we did it before. We did the model 8 prediction from Finkbeiner, and just an extrapolation of the dust match from Schlegel. The model is a two-component fit to IRAS, Derby, and FIRAS data. And Bennett and Alex showed it to be a reasonable template for the dust emission. So what I'm just showing in this plot just a strip, flat strip of our maps in the south and just some of the dust emission. And I should also mention that we have spherical full sky field tips maps, but we've got like a four-line Python code to make flat maps out of that and just interpolate them. And it's a real simple thing to do using FieldPix tools, FieldPix interpolation tools. That's even probably something can be made public as well. And so again, plans to add the synchrotron and free-free are under consideration. I would like to do that. It's not of immediate relevance for ACTS, but I think it'd be more useful for the lower frequencies and for other experiments. So here's the power spectrum. So that's the lens CMB power spectrum. The red is the thermal SD. And the blue line is the radio sources. This is all from the simulation. And the green is the infrared sources. So one thing to note about the blue points, there's, let me mention the green points. You can see that it's not a straight line. If it was completely straight, it would be white noise and there'd be no clustering, but you see that this excessive power indicates the clustering that we have in infrared sources. And the same excess was seen in the recently published BLACKS maps, and they have a power spectrum, and you can see the similar clustering of the IR sources on those scales. And then for our radio sources, there is a red line, actually, that goes through these points. I was pretty surprised at how well it matched. But that's the Topolati et al. 1999 model, rescaled by 0.64, which was shown to be a good fit to the WMAP5 data. And then in our simulations, the YM relation, so we've heard a lot already, if the relation was self-similar, then we would expect alpha to be 5/3. And what we find for our simulation, so here I'm plotting all the halos above 2 times 10 to the 14 solar mass. This is for M200 and Y200. And you find that it's an alpha that's pretty close to 5/3, maybe just a little larger. And this is for different scaling relations, Y200, M200, and 500, and then a cross between Y500 and 200, which papers like Laurie's, Dylan, and Paul suggest that that might be a lower scatter relation. And the scatter that we find, calculated in the same way as Laurie's paper, is about 15 to 20% for these clusters, 2 times 10 to 14. So just to summarize, we created a new set of simulations with field picks, 6 different frequencies, and they include all of the significant microwave contributions we think of as best as we could match it to any observational constraints that were there. I should also mention that every component has its own separate full-sky map. So you can use whatever components you want. You can add different components as you see fit. And you can also, if you don't like infrared source model, you can use your own with just point sources thrown down randomly or whatever you like. And in fact, you can see, you can test how, for example, your selection function would change if you use this clustered IR source model as opposed to sources randomly thrown down, etc. And then there's, of course, a full sky map. So I said, ACT is currently using these simulations to test their analysis pipeline, and hopefully they can have some broader use. And so my plan is certainly to make them public as soon as possible.
We'll go over a little bit for questions, I think, just because you only had a half an hour. But I want to start off with a quick question. So can we go back to your, when you showed the components, the individual components of the model, just real quick?
Power spectrum.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, the power spectrum?
Yeah, the individual components as shown in the top. Well, back one more, we'll come back to that one. Yeah, right there. The upper element? Yeah, so I was curious. So when you get out here. I see. It's only. So you're far above the cluster is really dominating here, out of a couple thousand, right? Yeah, and so what was interesting is it was that in your power spectra, it looked like that cost cluster was a little bit lower when you can really see the clustering coming in. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the sum total. Both, you know, the Poisson term and that other term.
Right.
And yeah, really, both in the blast maps and here, it's not really coming in above 1,000. You really see it below 1,000.
Right. What you're saying here, I guess, from this is that the cluster, your model of the clustering slip has this climb. It's not flat it's not flat in L squared CL.
Right.
Well, and it's got to turn over eventually, right?
Eventually, yeah.
What? Do you know what halo scale is? And what is the scale of the clustering? Where should we expect to see the clustering turn back over?
I think
what is the power spectrum of the clustering look like?
Yes, if you just plotted the clustering term out to infinity, eventually it would.
So I think this, according to Carlos, is supposed to be a plot of just the clustering as a thick line, and then the Poisson part, and those two should equal what's in the simulation. Although I should mention, I think that the way that these lines are calculated is with a theoretical model of the power spectrum. So this is not actually calculated right from the simulation. It's using a theoretical model of the clustering and a theoretical model of the spectrum.
Yeah, I think we'll have to talk later about that, because that seems a little funny. It doesn't do what we think it should do.
What do you think it should do?
Well, the blast results show that it's, blast sees clustering, and it comes up, and it's actually quite flat in L squared CL.
Well, the blast maps are consistent with clustering coming in at L below.
Right, the plot before. The one that Bill was waving at.
It might be a difference in that the theoretical model that was used to calculate that is not actually matching the simulation. That might just be an approximation. That was not made from the simulation, but this is what's actually in the simulation.
Right. So that kind of looks like it agrees with the blast results, but that other one looked a little funny.
But it was, I think that it was done just to make sure that we were under the off-bar limit.
Okay, maybe that was like maxing out the cluster.
It was maxing out the clustering to just stay underneath the off-bar limit.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. All right. Any other questions?
At which rate does your gas fraction become universal if you sort of populate the halos with gas?
It
goes out. You fill gas from the center out until you reach the cosmic fraction.
Where?
It's usually pushing out beyond our virial. You have to go out beyond our virial to reach there.
Twice or?
No, 1.2 to 1.5, depending on the halo you're talking, halo mass.
Any other questions? Okay.